Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Chris Jonas from Blind Sailing Canada. So tell me a little bit about blind sailing.
Hi, Kim. Thank you so much for inviting me on. So blind sailing was started exactly 20 years ago. This is our 20th season. It was started by four blind and or vision impaired people in 2001. They decided it'd be really cool to start a blind sailing club, because there had been nothing like that anywhere in Canada, really. And we're the only, as far as I know, we're the only blind sailing program in the country as of now. We're based in the Greater Toronto Area, sail on Lake Ontario. We have three sailboats, two Catalinas, and we just got a new 30-foot cruiser, which we're very excited about. As I said, we've been doing it for 20 years now. We have about 30 to 35 blind or vision impaired members, and it's a pretty core group. A lot of them have been with us for many, many years, and we're always looking to have new people join. We're looking to bring in more younger people because we have most of our core group are probably in their 50s or older. So we're looking to bring in younger people. We have three basic types of sailing that we offer. For most of our 20 years, we've been doing day cruises, which is basically a three-hour cruise. We also do racing, and we got quite involved with racing over the last 5 years especially. We hosted a world championship 2 years ago, which went really well. We won gold and silver in that for Canada. And this year with our new boat, with our new 30-foot cruiser, we're looking to get more involved with distance cruising. So a little of something for everything. We keep it affordable for our members. We also have two fully sighted people, experienced sailors, on every sail that we take out, just for safety purposes. I'd say our three main focuses are safety, fun, and learning, and we focus on all three of those areas. So that's a little bit of a background on blind sailing.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the modified equipment you might use for the boats themselves?
Well, for blind sailing, we're a little bit different than disabled sailing, because disabled sailing, which is mostly for people with mobility issues, they do have modified boats. Blind sailing, we're not at all modified. It's a regular sailboat. You wouldn't notice the difference from any other sailboat. We don't modify it at all. So our main modification, if you want to call it that, is we have sighted crew on board to help our blind sailors, and they will show them where all the equipment is, you know, where the helm is, where the sails are, where the rigging is, etc. We allow our members to go all over the boat, including on the foredeck, everywhere to get the full sailing experience. But our boats themselves are not the least bit modified. They're just regular sailboats.
So, how do you go about reaching out to the vision impaired community about the work you do?
How do we reach out?
Yes.
It's mostly word of mouth. As I said, we're based in Toronto. We have tried a few times to get chapters going in other parts of the country, but it takes a lot of commitment and a lot of passion from people, and it's really difficult to get another chapter started. So we're focused primarily right now in Toronto. And it's mostly word of mouth. We have a core group, as I said, about 30 to 35 blind members or vision impaired. The blind community in Toronto is very connected. So, you know, a lot of FaceTime, a lot of Zoom calls. We get together a lot socially when it's not a pandemic. So that's mostly it. We do connect with the CNIB, and we're starting to get more involved with them this in the next year or so. Hopefully, try to get more younger people out to our program. But that's primarily it. It's mostly word of mouth plus connecting with the blind community through the CNIB primarily.
So, in your time with blind sailing, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh yeah, I would say we have a few. One would be, I mentioned racing. So we decided we wanted to host a world championship because Canada had never done that. So we worked with Kingston Yacht Club, and it was a two-year project to get it going. And we had 14 teams from all over the world. We had three teams from Canada competing in that. And we did really well on the water. And just the whole aspect of getting the event organized, there was a huge amount of work, all the fundraising that's required, and we got recognized by Ontario Sailing as the provincial regatta of the year in 2019, and we also got recognized by Sail Canada as being a co-winner of the national regatta of the year. So it was a fantastic event. Big event for our group, I think, would be probably about, I guess it's about 8 years ago now, where we, are you still hearing me?
Yes.
Sorry, I lost you for a minute. About 8 years ago, we got a big grant from Ontario Trillium Foundation, and because we had a couple of older boats that really needed replacing, so we went out and we bought two brand new sailboats. And one of the big changes was, we went with a larger boat. And there was a little bit of hesitation at first on the board, because we didn't know how our members would react to that, but it's become our most popular boat. It's a 27-foot Catalina. And we do a lot of, not just three-hour cruising, but extended cruising, overnight cruising as well. And we're hoping to extend on that with our 30-footer that we just got now a couple months ago. So our membership has remained fairly stable at about 30-plus members. We're trying to grow that. But we've been really successful. We are a charity. We're registered as a charity. We've been really successful at keeping our program affordable through fundraising and donations mostly. I would say those two things, the racing success and the new boats that we brought in and how successful they've been. And we get out over 100 times every year, except for last year, of course, because of the pandemic. It's been a very successful program for 20 years now.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
In this segment of our show, we'll be chatting with Ron Selsey in the Toronto Power Wheelchair Hockey League.
Tell me a little bit about your experiences with hockey.
I've been involved with wheelchair hockey about as long as my son Sean has been, about 18 years, right? So Sean has cerebral palsy, and it started 18 years ago. He was at Fleurview Children's Hospital, and after some surgeries and stuff, part of their rehab program, they started with a wheelchair hockey sort of get-together, on weekends and during the week, sort of as a physical activity for kids recuperating from various operations and conditions and stuff like that. So we kind of got involved there for a couple of years, and then it kind of grew and grew and grew, and then finally it developed into a hockey league. And the Sean started to play, and I started to come as a parent and watching. There's a couple, Esther, who you spoke to earlier, Esther Azura, who is the president of our league. Her and her partner at that time, who has since passed away, they started to form this league out of an offspring of other leagues. There was a Canadian Electric Wheelchair Hockey League that is we're still affiliated with, that had a league in Toronto, and this league sort of sprung out of that league and grew from there. So my role sort of increased over the years to, as Sean continued to play, I started to do some coaching, and I was doing some refereeing, and then I became a part of the board of directors, and then took over as the general manager once Paul McDougall, the former general manager, passed away.
So
it's all part of that.
So, in terms of the sport itself, how has it been for you watching your son out there actually being part of a team and having a chance to participate in sport?
Well, it's been really terrific, really, the sport. And not only watching my son, but all players we bring into the league, the players that have been there from the beginning, some of them, all the new ones we bring in. Kids with disabilities get lots of one-on-one attention. I know when John was in school, he had an aide with him, and whenever you go to therapy, it's kind of hands-on one-on-one, which is great to help them through their disability or assist them with the disability. But they never really get a chance to, as you said, be part of a team and feel that experience of, the camaraderie on the bench and, cheering for each other and having a team cheer for you and getting the opportunity to, in front of people to prove yourself and expand your horizon. So we see kids come in and, between the parents are kind of shy and nervous too because, it's power wheelchair hockey and these kids are flying around, having a great time. And the kids too, usually at the first, not all, but most are a little apprehensive about the game and the speed of the game. But they quickly adapt and you just see their faces glow and they kind of grow and they open up and, they start believing in themselves and that they have abilities, not disabilities, but they have abilities. So it's been really rewarding for me, and I know Sean, it's become a whole community. My son, he's involved in the league too. He administers the website for the league, and he's the social media coordinator. So he hooks all up the Facebook pages for all the teams and reaches out, on special events and all that kind of thing. So it's been a great experience. It's been life-changing for me. I think life-changing for Sean as well.
So do you use any modified equipment within the sport itself?
Yeah, so we try and adapt, for the players, right? So we'll adapt all kinds of stuff, whether it's the chair or whether it's equipment, because the league, hockey, we play it in a gymnasium on a gym floor, right? But basically it's the same as Canadian hockey, right? Yeah, we modify a little bit because we're on a gym floor. We run with three forwards, one defenseman, and a goalie. And really basically the same rules, the same penalties, as regular hockey. But as we get individuals, depending on their disability, Sean has cerebral palsy, more and more his muscles and stuff are involved, right? A lot of players have muscular dystrophy, we have spina bifida, we have brittle bone disease. So we try and accommodate. If people can use their arms, quite well or fairly well, we use regular floor ball sticks, they're called. It's a sport, especially in Europe, floorball, and it's kind of a solving, graphite stick type of thing, kind of a fancy stick that people can use. It's very, very lightweight. But for individuals who can't use their arms, we use regular ball hockey sticks and, adapt them to their chair. We cut them to size, we modify, we bend, we tape them on, we Velcro them on, and anything to make it work, right, for the individual. We also a league, I think we're the only league in Canada that has a, that I'm aware of anyway, we have some a core of loaner chairs, so we've got chairs donated to us, we have some technicians who volunteer to help fix up the chairs, and if some people come in, they're only in a manual chair, or they have a, you know, they get a brand new chair and they don't want to get it dinged up a bit, we can loan them a chair for when they play in the league.
So, in your time with the league, is there any individual success story that stands out for you?
Oh, that's a tough one. Again, as I mentioned before, they're all individual stories, and it's all, you know, steps, you know. I mean, most recently we have a young man that comes in from up in Bracebridge. So we play in Toronto, the north end of Toronto. So they're up in Bracebridge, Huntsville area around there. You know, there's like a one and a half, 2 hour drive. And I remember, you know, his mom got in touch with us. We talked about, said, we'll bring him down. And he was a shy little fella. And he kind of came in, and by the end of the first little practice and ever, his mom was in tears. She said, well, dude, this is fabulous. We've never found anything like this, and up, especially up where they live, right? And same with him. He kind of very timid, you know, at the beginning of the first practice. And by the end of the practice, he was already saying, well, coach, put me out. Coach, put me out, you know. And after two or three games, he just blossomed. And we've seen that so many times that it's just, you know, it almost makes you teary-eyed when you see it happen. And I know the mother was so grateful, and the dads got involved too. And you know, lots of parents too. They're so proud to have their kid. We're Canadian. They want to play hockey. And when your kid gets to play hockey, whether he's able-bodied or disabled, it's a warm Canadian thing for us all to do.
So you could send any message to the aspiring athletes out there who might not think they'd be able to participate in something like hockey. What would you tell them?
Say, you know, don't be afraid. You know, give it a try. Get out there. You know, try to believe in yourself and see if it's for you. Some sports may not be for you, but you know, we'll do our best. I mean, safety of our players and of our coaches and our referees of utmost concern. So we're not going to let you do anything that's going to hurt you. Again, it can be a little bit of a rough sport, and you know, people do get banged up a little bit. But we, you know, knock on wood, over the years, we've never really had a major incident with anybody. And just give it a try, you know, join the community, be involved. I mean, we try to be very supportive too of parents, because a lot of us, like Sean's in his 30s, Esther, her son's almost 30. You know, we've got lots of experience with dealing with therapists and all those kind of things that can help them in their everyday life, or at least advise people, because when you have a child that has disabilities, sometimes the parents feel isolated too. So it's an opportunity for them, the parents, to believe in their kids to believe in themselves, and come out and try it. You know, we kind of say, come out and watch for a game or two, right? We're lucky we play out of a public school before COVID. COVID's changed everything right now. And again, we've been shut down for, you know, over the past year or so. But we're in a gymnasium, we have a stage, you know, some people can come out and watch, get a feel for it, you know. We've had a few players that weren't quite sure. I said, well, come before the first game. We play 3 games a day because we have 6 teams. Come out, we give them a stick, we give them a ball, we adapt, whatever, and just let them play around the gym and see if it's for them. But give it a try.
White, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, yeah, no problem.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Jill Barber. I'm a singer-songwriter and a spokesperson for the 2021 edition of Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie. From March 1st to 31st, we'll be celebrating remotely, but all together. There will be a host of activities, contests, and games. So don't miss out. To find out what's cooking in the 2021 edition Rendezvous de la Francophonie, visit rvf.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show,
we heard a little bit about power wheelchair hockey from Ron Selsey, and Chris Jonas told us a little bit about blind sailing. And this next interview, folks, is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Vicky Keith from the YMCA. So, the YMCA has a disability swimming program. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, it's a program for kids with physical disabilities, and it's called the Kingston Y Penguins. And it's a swim team for kids with disabilities and their able-bodied siblings.
So, is there any specialized training that goes in for these swimmers with disabilities?
Well, basically, it's a swim team, so all of the athletes are following the same protocols. It's learn to swim, grassroots swimming, all the way up to the elite level. There are some individual requirements for the athletes. Each athlete has a different disability, therefore they will require different things. But they're, you know, it's just basically a swim team.
So, what are some of the most common adaptations? Since you mentioned every athlete has a different ability level, what are some of the most common modifications you see that you need to make?
It's hard to say because I coach a club that's combined able-bodied and para, and I coach the same programs. I think it's really important that we focus on technique, and so some of the things I might be doing is if an athlete doesn't have the ability to kick, I might be adjusting their core position so that they sit higher in the water. But it's basically coaching people, not a disability. So there's not an awful lot to it, except that it's just figuring out a way for each person to move independently.
So how do you spread the word about this work?
Really, it's word of mouth. I do have good connections with the Kids Inclusive, which is the development program for children at the hospital. But mostly it's families saying, this is something really important to us. Our child and our family has benefited from it. We recommend your family consider it as well.
So what are some of the benefits for someone, say, with a movement challenge as their disability?
Well, I think that it's first of all, it develops fitness, balance, coordination, strength, all the things that we need physically. But the team isn't just about that. It's also about developing friendships, finding connections, parents having connections as well, because a lot of times they feel secluded, and if their child's going to go in for a surgery, which is far more common in our population, there's usually another family that's gone through a similar situation. So it gives them context, it gives them contact, and for the young people, it's just even having a friend. There's a number, 53% of kids with a disability don't have a friend, and that's really a painful number, but when you think about it, some of those kids are likely saying, I don't have a friend, or I have a friend because there's someone that's nice to me. And that's not truly the definition of a friend. So I think the number's likely higher. So programs like the Y Penguins isn't just about the physical connection, but also the opportunity for them to make friends and have fun and have a strong social life.
So for the able-bodied swimmers, they're getting a chance to see a swimmer with a disability doing exactly what they're doing, just being alongside them. That would seem to form this bridge of connection that we're talking about.
It does. The kids on the swim team are siblings, so that they've already seen but they start to see other people's disabilities and how it impacts them as well. But then we go to a swim meet where there's also able-bodied swimmers who don't have any experience sometimes with somebody with a disability. And oftentimes they're just struck by the ability of the young people that I coach, not the disability. The disability disappears in the water, and all they see is a strong swimmer.
So they'd be out there just doing their thing and not thinking about what might be holding them back. They're just living in the moment then.
Yeah, and I don't think they spend an awful lot of time of what might be holding them. A lot of time on focusing on the positive and what they're able to do. So we don't spend time on what their limitation might be, but rather what their possibilities are, what their abilities are, and we focus on that so that they can strengthen those.
So, in your time coaching, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh, there's so many. Everything from one of my athletes, Abby Tripp, competing at the Paralympics, winning medals on the international stage, to a number of my athletes who have swum across different bodies of water. Jenna Lambert swam across Lake Ontario. Ashley Cowan, who is a quadruple amputee, swam across Lake Erie. And then just the days when a parent looks and sees their child achieving something that medical staff had said there was no way it was possible. And one tear down a parent's cheek as they realize that there are lots of possibilities for their child and that there's more opportunities than restrictions.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep focusing on the positive and what is possible, what would you say?
I think we have to look at our perspective. We can, for instance, look at COVID right now and see it as a really negative situation because of all the things we've lost. Or we can look at COVID and see the few things that maybe have changed in our lives because of COVID in a positive way. It's the same thing as you can look at a disability and think about what that person may not be able to do, but on the other side of it, you can look and think about all the things they can do. I mean, very few people could swim across Lake Erie, but Ashley Cowan, a quadruple amputee, was able to. I think it's all about perspective, and when we put things in perspective, we start realizing that we have a choice. We can see the things in a positive light or a negative light, and that is our choice. And I think that most people would agree that positivity feels so much better that it's the better direction to focus.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Line sailing just floors me when I think about it. But the fact is, we as a society take it all too easily to assume what people can or cannot do, when in fact, we should be taking that same amount of time and effort to train them, to teach them, to explore the possibilities of human potential. For no one human being has the right to tell another, you are incapable, you will never achieve your dream. Fact is, we don't know what adaptations haven't been invented yet. We don't know what is possible for tomorrow. But we owe it to ourselves to allow for the possibility of finding that out. For any person who starts off with a creative mind and a dream, there's no telling what they will achieve. There's no way that we can put a limit on that simply because we're not comfortable with the notion of expanding our own thought processes. Are we really stuck in a mindset that says people can only be X, Y, and Z? Are we really so arrogant as to assume we know what it is that a person will become? Can we really put labels on others in this way? When I hear some of the work that goes on, things like blind sailing, power hockey, or even just in day-to-day life, for individuals with disabilities, enjoying themselves, living at their best, achieving their own hopes, their own dreams, not because they're necessarily trying to change the world, but simply because they're doing what they want to do. I'm always, always amazed by this. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.